altitude's undefeated.
Crap, maybe we'll punch it up, whatever it was in.
Not a huge time on it,
I don't know where I was going. I looked like I was running and started to talk to someone. I don't know what I was doing.
I tell you what, Matt, we don't get much by you, that's for sure. From you and analysis in your car, in your home. Thank you for tuning to Holding the High Line.
Ring it in, Rapids fans. This is Holding the High Line. My name is Matt Pollard, and it is Wednesday, June 14th, 2023. Messi is coming to Major League Soccer. That had not happened since the last time we podcasted. Feels like a million years ago now. The Denver Nuggets are your 2023 NBA champions as they won their first ever ring in franchise history. And the Rapids lost again in Orlando and got two red cards. But the CONCACAF Nations League is returning this week, and Colorado Rapids' own Moise Bombito made a late call-up for Canada. I'm joined now in the face by Brendan Plone of the Denver Post. What's up, Brendan?
Matt, how are you doing?
I'm doing okay. There's a siren going outside. We're doing this. This is the second podcast that we've had you on, Brendan, and we're in the living room instead of the second bedroom. So listeners, let us know what you think about the acoustics. We're only about 15 feet away from the Jeff Lorenowitz Memorial Kitchen Island where normally I'm sat upon. Rabbi will not be joining us tonight, folks. He is on vacation with the kiddos in D.C. doing lots of National Monument and National Mall National Capital stuff in the district, so he's unavailable. And there was an option, Brendan, for us to have him podcast like from the bathroom with the door closed and everything. And we've done some janky logistical things in the history of HTHL, namely Rabbi working off of his phone, off of a hotspot in the parking lot while camping in Nowhere, Virginia. And I decided to just give Rabbi the night off. So just like Moise Bombito, Brendan, you're the late call-up.
Well, I appreciate it. You know, I did think it was actually going to be the three of us. And then he DM'd us back saying, you know, it's a blessing not to have to talk about our cursed team this week. So in classic Rabbi by form, he makes us crack up even when he's not appearing on the pod.
Yes. So, Brendan, we have not podcasted since Messi, that news, officially broke. And I got to be honest, Brendan. By Saturday morning, I was already over it because, like, I had talked about it. I had written about it on Last Word SC. We hadn't talked about it yet on HTHL yet. But just, like, of all the soccer podcasts that I listen to that normally have a wide spectrum of things that they cover and outlets that I read that have a wide spectrum of what they cover, I didn't need four straight days of Messi, who officially has not signed a contract yet, officially has not put on a shirt, and we don't know what number he's wearing in pink for Inter Miami. That being said, Brendan, I immediately texted all of my other friends. Guys, is this how annoyed you were by the Beckham circus and by Zlatan? Am I in some level of a galaxy bubble here, Brendan? So that question, and then just very briefly, I've already written about it. Listeners, I'll put a link in the show notes to my take on Burgundy Wave, and Rabbi wrote about it for Backpass. But Brendan, anything rapid specific to Messi that you want to say?
I mean, it's massive. It's kind of the phrase that all tides lift all boats, something like
rising
that.
Rising tides lift all boats.
Thank you. There we go. It's like that. However, I have also gotten really annoyed with the incessant Messi talk when he has not officially signed a contract. I checked MLSsoccer.com, and we're a week in, and you know what? They still have basically the same premise as when he first signed of, I'm coming to Miami. It's like, all right, we get it. It's going to be an absolute circus when he does arrive. But in the meantime, there's still plenty of other soccer to focus on.
Mm-hmm. So to your point, Brendan, I pull up Major League Soccer, soccer.com right now, and the header that they have, they've got Messi in an Argentina warm-up shirt, and it says Lionel Messi would bring MLS Inter Miami to, quote, a whole new level. Not will, would, again implying that it actually hasn't happened yet.
Plus three other stories. Mm-hmm. And that's even before we get into match day 19. So, you know, they're running with this so hard. And listen, it's a colossal deal. We get it. but there's also 28 other teams in the league. Mm-hmm. And there's, one of them is the Colorado Rapids.
One interesting question that I have now, Brendan, as we'll get into it in a bit, is I have to believe Messi showing up, Inter Miami is going to get pulled out of the wooden spoon conversation. And then I think, unfortunately, the three teams that you then have to have a conversation about are the Rapids, the Galaxy, who are on a transfer embargo, who obviously can't sign a striker from outside of MLS, so they can make deals within MLS with league money as well. But Rabbi, you have to imagine, if Porik Smith, this will not happen, listeners, if Porik Smith gets a call from Greg Vanney saying, hey, we lost Chicharito, it's Dejan up top, we want Kevin back, Porik is going to do everything he can to get actual money, despite how crap that Kevin Cabral is, and that speaks to the fact that the Galaxy really can't get a whole lot better on paper. Inter Miami is about to get a whole lot better, and Brendan, it'd be one of your thoughts, are Chicago Fire going to get dragged into this?
Well, you did call me Rabbi earlier, and I am not Rabbi. I am, as my name suggests, I am quite Irish. However, Chicago, even with Shaqiri, listen, they're still spending money. LA Galaxy, you know, they'll still spend money, and it's like, you're right. You're 100% right. It's like, how, if you're, or they're more than halfway through the season and they're at the wooden spoon line, given how the way that, I guess, teams will ultimately use the window, it's hard to see the Rapids trying to really, really get above that line right now. Mm. And, I mean, let's just check out.
So if I just, I've got the supporter shield standings up right now.
Thank you. I was going to look for that too.
So there is a caveat here, listeners. There's a substantial difference in terms of number of games played here in MLS. You know, some Galaxy have played 16 games. Most teams are on 17. The Rapids have obviously played 18 games. But so NYCFC is kind of down there, Brendan. But I feel like they get rid of Nick Cushing and then make a good coaching hire, they'll be out of that. I have to think the
Red
worst.
Bull? Or Austin. Austin could slip, but
I feel like their floors are relatively well established. Yeah. Red Bull at least have an identity in terms of what they're doing tactically. They have holes on their roster, but they have a good base around them.
Yes.
Assuming they don't sell John Tolkien, for example. Austin, just by the fact that they have Driussi, I have to think they're not in the conversation. Messi going to Miami removes them. And so then I look at it, it's Rapids on 13 points on 18 games played. Galaxy on 13 points on 16 games played, Fire on 17 and 17, and then I have to go all the way up to RSL, Mark, or RSL, Rabbi, RSL, Brendan, goddamn it, Matthew, who are about to break a club record to bring Chicho Arango, who is a proven player in MLS. So, as we'll get to in a little bit, talking vis-a-vis the media reaction to the Nuggets winning their first championship, the Rapids are financially non-competitive with the rest of MLS. That gap is only increasing. Messi could see that increase further, and I don't see the Rapids improving. And, you know, Brendan, I don't know how you look at the headline of RSL spending potentially $6 million to bring back Chicho Arango, going to be a record transfer fee for the club, going to be a record salary for the club. And Pablo looks at that and said, I beat the Rapids twice in 1 week. We're way above them in the table. I have won this breakup. It is not competitive.
Yeah.
And given where the Rapids were when they fired him and everything, like, I think it's I'll get to it in a little bit. Brandon, I'm just going to say it. So we won't be talking about the two games next week, folks. That's too far in the future for us. And we've got other salty things to discuss as well. But I'm going to say, Brendan, Rapids are hosting Vancouver next Wednesday, a week from today. And then are hosting LA Galaxy on the weekend on the 21st for Pride Night. If the Rapids do not get 4 points in that week, I will predict that they will win the wooden spoon.
Ooh. I mean, yeah, I could see that. My start of the year prediction was I thought they had enough in the tank to finish seventh and find a way to get into the true playoffs, not even the playoff play-in game. But now with these injuries and just the way that this team is kind of just week in, week out, finds new ways to lose. Well, I guess similar ways, but new players to that ultimately, you know, plays a role in the loss, unfortunately. I can see that happening. And They've won the Wooden Spoon once, but that came in 1996. And it's ironic that the three teams that we're talking about comes in the week that MLS announced that they're going to – they named a sporting executive, Chris McGowan, has been named the executive vice president and the chief club performance officer. So there was that article in The Athletic about trying to help all teams in the league really increase their revenue and help the original teams not flounder at the bottom. Well, sure enough, this week they announced they've got a guy for that role. So we'll see if that impacts the three teams at the current bottom of the standings, which were all MLS originals. Well, the Fire, close enough. Mm-hmm. You know, it's just one of those. It's just, I can't believe it is June 14th and we're talking about this early in the season.
It speaks to where the Rapids are right now. So, listeners, Brendan and I are a Chicago Bulls and Los Angeles Lakers fan, respectively. Rabbi and
actually, go Bucks.
Go Bucks. I apologize. So we are not Nuggets fans. I was so happy for the Nuggets. I was happy for their fans. There's so many members of the Rapids community who are Nuggets fans. Mm-hmm. And I think you saw very obviously what it meant to so many people, particularly those individuals, Brendan, who were out and about enjoying the festivities and randomly ran into Gordon, who decided to walk home shirtless in his game shorts and everything. An immediate Nuggets legend right there. He could retire tomorrow and he's a Nuggets legend having played 1 year with the team. So we're not going to talk about what it means from a basketball standpoint from that perspective. I did have the Nuggets winning in the Western Conference Finals against my Lakers, Brendan. I had it in 6 instead of in 4, and I had Nuggets in 6 in the finals. Close enough for me.
I thought it would be 5. I mean, I went to Marquette. I love Jimmy Butler. He gets buckets all day long, but I just knew there was something special about this Nuggets team that was not going to stop them from standing in the way of so much history, and it they ultimately broke through.
So we've seen, Brendan, the media reaction that has come out of that, and particularly a lot of the parallels that have people brought to KSC. First of all, Brendan, you watched the post-game media. Like, Stan Kroenke, of all the sports where the owner gets interviewed on the podium and is given the trophy, mm-hmm. I'm not sure in my lifetime, and I'll go back to, like, the Super Bowl in 1997 with John Elway, I don't know that I've seen another owner, whoever that person is getting interviewed, is more and more awkward. And you think Stan would be getting better at these, given that he's had a couple of them in recent years and everything? But, like, the Lisa Saunders or whoever it was for ESPN holding the mic, and, like, he's talking into her ear even though her mic's over there. I realize this is an audio podcast, so you can't see the... Go watch the video and you'll understand the awkwardness. But, like, at some point, Brendan, if it's another 5 years from now before this happens, like, Josh has to be the one. Stan, you can be there. Josh is doing the talking, so he's awkward. But a lot of people bringing up Rams, they've brought up Arsenal's won an FA Cup under him as well. They obviously haven't won a league or a European trophy. They don't have a European Cup. And the Rams have won the Super Bowl recently in the first year of SoFi, second year of SoFi. A couple years ago, two Super Bowls ago now, the Rams won the Super Bowl, and a lot of the documentation of that, Brendan, either left out the Rapids entirely, so either saying soccer is not a major sport, or saying that the Rapids are the bottom of the KSC food chain. I want to believe on some level, I've seen a couple of them, Brendan, where they said it's been an amazing few years for KSC and for Stan Kroenke. I would say 13 years from the 2010 MLS Cup is far away enough to where they're in that guard, but there's a lot of Rapids fans who are salty that, you know, they're being ignored from that sport. And as we've seen, Brendan, some of the people from those outlets are kind of clapping back in a yes, you're irrelevant kind of way.
Yeah. So I tweeted it out, and Rapids fans, y'all certainly noticed the media attention that KSE garnered, and that, oh, wait, that's right. The Rapids are also owned by KSE. It is very much acknowledged. But the last week, Roger Bennett, who we would love to visit, for him to visit Denver one of these days on a Men in Blazer tour. And
Colorado's going to have to be relevant from a soccer standpoint to make it relevant, Brendan.
Mal Swanson, Sophia Smith, and Lindsey Horan help make it relevant. So,
okay, it makes sense. Yes.
But anyway, so on the Messi podcast, he literally said DSGP is almost like a trip to the dark side of the moon. And then yesterday, you know, we're talking about KSE, Hurt Gomez, a former Rapids player, played for the team when the stadium opened.
Scored the first goal in the history of Dick's Sporting Goods.
Yes, yes, that Herc. He literally tweeted out, you know, Stan couldn't be bothered to show up for the opening of the Rapids stadium that he built. And winning with the Colorado Rapids is not a priority. And then Alexi Lalas last night, he was on some cross-country flight, and he did an AMA session on Twitter. And somebody asked him, what MLS club would you kick out of the league? What USL club would you put into MLS? Straight up just said, to the point, Colorado, out. Detroit City, in. And then yesterday as well, but I noticed it today, Nine News, our lovely Nine News, and I know the guy who wrote this article, no diss to him at all, but, you know, he was saying how the major four sports of Denver, you know, and then listed all the titles of the major teams, but he left off A, both the Rapids 2010 Cup, and B, the Mammoth from last year. So, yeah, it's been a crazy, crazy week, really, for people from the national scene reflecting on the last decade plus of the Rapids. And they don't even recognize, yes, they had good years in 2016 and 2021. They just recognize the bad, mm-hmm. straight up. And this is only my second year on the beat. And, of course, I know the long history that so many Rapids fans have, frankly, been going through. And, frankly, y'all, this week, you guys deserve better from the national media, frankly.
Better from the local media.
And the local, I remember, as well. Because they are the ones that are ultimately wearing the shirt day in, day out. Of course, the players are too. And, of course, the front office, the comms people we really respect and all that stuff. They're absolutely going through it too. But the fans, you know, they're lifers. And for the national spotlight to be on this organization in the wrong way and only point out the negatives, it doesn't tell the full picture at all, because Rapids fans, ever since I've been on the beat, you guys have been phenomenal and the most helpful possible. So even though, while it might seem really doomy and gloomy right now, and it probably is one of the doomiest times in a long, long time, you know, for those that keep the faith and are still positive, we really appreciate you. Mm-hmm. And Rand.
Yeah. Brendan, I remember there were people who were at I can't remember if this was the Anthony Hudson big press conference they did to introduce him or if it was the one for Robin Fraser, but I spoke to somebody who was from one of the local news outlets. I won't say which. It's one of the big ones. It was not Nine News Denver, since you just kind of took a shot at them, Brendan.
Sorry.
But
I was just saying, I just pointed out, I didn't say who wrote the article, but the outlet that published said poll, and it was 2,000 people that voted on it.
Mm-hmm.
The Rapids weren't included at all.
Mm-hmm. Yes. So that outlet, Brendan, they had not been to DSG since the Tim Howard press announcing Tim Howard. So you're talking about Howard comes middle of 2016, and they hadn't been there since. It would have been late in the calendar year 2018 for Anthony Hudson. It would have been, August, September-ish for Robin Fraser in the case of 2019.
Yep.
And so, Brennan, I think it speaks to, there's a lot of those media outlet where soccer is on the secondary market, or it's what gets buried under their headline, or they only spend 10 minutes on it, or, you know, the local Altitude channel would give Robin Fraser a courtesy, you know, 10, 15 minutes a week when it was during the season. Those types of outlets, if for some reason, and I wrote about this in Burgundy Wave, why this won't happen, I don't think Messi's going to have like a 6-year contract, Brendan. I think for enough time to happen for them to be like, okay, we can't give him LAFC and the Galaxy in Seattle every year and not have him come to Colorado. But on the off chance that Messi does end up there, Brendan, there will be a number of outlets that have only criticized the club, only dunked on them when the club's already drowning, that have not physically been out to DSG since the Thanksgiving playoff game, if that. So, and I think that speaks to, unfortunately, where the club's at, and fans can get in the mentions and the notifications of these outlets and everything and try to push back and everything, and I think there's an understandable chicken or the egg of which one that is, but the fact that these outlets aren't doing that, and the only people who are bringing it up are the most diehard Rapids fans on Twitter and everything, just speaks to the fact that the club is not in the public consciousness, and when it is, it's in a negative standpoint. And unfortunately, as we've seen, the only time that really changes is when they are vastly overperforming expectations, like they did in 16, like they did in 21.
Or when some other KSE team does something significant, like the Nuggets winning its first title and bringing up how successful KSE has been. So for Rapids fans, I tweeted out this the other day, and I kind of think it kind of sums it up. I've got this wall calendar, the Far Side, the great cartoon from Gary Larson, and you know, it's the caption is, you know, "Go back to sleep, Chuck. You're just having a nightmare. Of course we are still in hell." And you know, one guy's got a nightmare, another guy's trying to wake him up, another guy in the corner is sleeping as the flames are burning high. And look it up; it's a pretty famous cartoon, but kind of sums up the last, I don't know, I mean, maybe the last really, really week. It feels like Rapids fans have, at least to me, have reached a boiling point. And, you know, it's a tough time for everybody. So,
last one that I have, Brendan, on this, and then we'll get to the actual game over the weekend. But an interesting question that I have coming off of the Nuggets celebrations. What Rapids player who's not in the legendary category, like, what Rapids player, if the Rapids were to win a trophy at home, could walk home in the greater Northfield area a la what Gordon did on Monday night and achieve like a level of legendary mythology that I think previously, because I mean, he was a decent X factor in this, but I think I think even the most astute Nuggets fans 5-10 years, like, it was Jokic, it was Jamal Murray, and then maybe he's in the conversation for MPJ. Like, yeah. We already know, if this team ever wins MLS Cup with Jack Price as captain, he is going full Alexander Ovechkin winning the cup in Vegas.
Oh, yeah.
And so we already know that's going to happen.
Lalas Abubakar.
Lalas Abubakar.
I could see him just walking home and be like, eh, I'm walking, talking to everybody, because he's a friend of everybody, and just the nicest guy in the world and would want to celebrate with everybody because he's a warrior for everybody.
And he's a similarly kind of crazy hair, like definitely a vibes guy as well. Yes. So I could.
Great vibes guy.
That's a really good one. I was struggling, Brendan, because correct me if I'm wrong, this is Gordon's first year with the Nuggets. First full year with the Nuggets. So yes. So who could have come in the last? Who's a relatively new guy? Then who could do, because Lawless has been here
Bruce Brown came in the offseason for the Nuggets.
Well, I mean, who's a relatively new Rapids player who could do that? Because it's not the same as the Nuggets drafting Jamal Murray, giving him a contract extension, about to sign him to a max and everything. So that's the one I'm wondering, because Gersbach's not really in the lineup. I don't think Andreas Makshu is that. He's not the vibes guy gonna hug a bunch of people and jump up and down in the street necessarily. No. Not saying he doesn't care about the fans whatsoever, but like, Danny Wilson is a private introvert, and he's a very private individual. He would not be doing that.
I've got another one. We might be on the same page here.
Yes.
Moise Bombito?
Moise I could see doing that as well. And the other one I thought, I think Ronan would be in for the vibe similar to Jack Price.
Oh, yes.
Absolutely. Yes. So if you're talking about new guys who would do that, I could see Ronan doing that as well. Or maybe a guy who doesn't show that personality but has had a few and then that personality comes out and then he's there for the vibes in that kind of a way. Possibly.
Or Kevin Cabral, completing the redemption tour.
Speaking of a lack of a redemption tour, so listeners, this past weekend at Exploria Stadium, the Colorado Rapids lost 2-0 to Orlando City. We're not going to do good thing, bad thing, big thing. The Rapids have gone eight games without a win. They have lost 7 of those 8 games, and I don't think it's productive nor interesting for, it's not productive for us. I don't think it's interesting or useful for you as Highliners, as listeners anymore, for us to break down all the nuances of what happened throughout the game, the narrative, and then try and quantify and make sense of it. So I'm simply going to say, Brendan, the Rapids come out. They don't start particularly well. They play better. Then they get a red card. Mm-hmm. Brian Galvan, straight red, karate kick, albeit trying to go for a, not a 50-50 ball, but like an 80-20 ball that he then goes into the oblique forearm of an Orlando player. Absolutely a red card. Orlando scores early in the first half. Facundo Torres, 56th minute. Rapids start to play a little bit better given the circumstances. They're down a man, down a goal. Lal Sabubakar gets a second yellow in the 57th. And then substitute Ramiro Enrique, I hope I'm pronouncing that correctly, scores the goal and it's 2-0 Orlando. I have a big thing that's a big huge rant that's kind of based on our post-game interactions with Robin Fraser, Brendan. But big picture, high level, what do you want to say about this game? Do not get in the weeds.
What do I want to say about this game? Big picture. This team, by the time that they get into the game and really start attacking, it's way too late. It feels like once teams are able to get their foot on the gas first, it is so hard for the Rapids to take that foot off and then put their own foot down and really influence the game. Midfield-wise, you know, even before Galvan's first, the red card, yes, they did have some good, quick possessions to get set pieces, to create those corners, but it wasn't sustained. And there, I don't think there were any really big shots at all through the first 35, 40 minutes. And then in the
it was two shots, Brendan, before the red card. Both were Cole Bassett.
You're right.
Relatively you're right. Innocent. There was a counterattack where I think a really nice tackle was made by Robin Janssen on Kevin Cabral. The Rapids did not have a shot between the first red card and the second red card.
They had,
which is shocking for me.
They had, no, I tweeted this out at full time. They had as many shots in the game, two, as they had red cards, two. So that kind of tells me where the lack of creativity is, especially if they fail to get put their foot on the gas first. Because we saw it against RSL. I mean, we saw it against Atlanta. We really saw it. I mean, I guess Columbus was kind of the exception.
San Jose. I felt they did at home, but then obviously the red card took it out from them. But yeah, I generally agree with that, Brendan. I thought they were...
That's my big thing, because game after game, I'm expecting, all right, this is going to be the game where they just find a way to really control the flow, don't get rushed, don't try and push it on the counter and then get pushed back and then give up a big, long spell of possession themselves. But that's exactly what happens.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if you look at that opening goal in the second half, or whenever that was, I don't know, it was a long time
56 ago. Minute.
Yeah, it came after a long spell, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, Orlando had been putting... The goal had been coming. Now, yeah. It was off of a deflection. It goes off of Max Schuh and everything. But, like, you can't put numbers behind the ball and be so non-threatening in transition,
yes,
and expect to get results in this game. And even that, and I would say that even when it was still 11-11, I thought Galvan was good before the red card.
Yeah. I
didn't think that Cabral was particularly threatening. I mean, he presses well, Brendan, but, you know, he gets the ball and then he tries to go on his own or do something to get some tech or highlight reel stuff. And it's too easy to get the ball away from him. Yes, he's occasionally breaking lines, but there's not, he's either offsides or the pass isn't connected or the opposing team scouts that well and the goalkeeper knows to come off his line and deal with it as well. Like, he has, two goals this season, and they're both tap-ins where the person who assisted him is the one who did most of the work. Rubio at LA Galaxy, and then Michael Barrios at Austin.
Right.
And the fact that I'm not seeing him pop up in other ways, I think just speaks to the fact that he's non-threatening, and I'm holding off out of almost kindness or sympathy for him to call him a bust at this point. But even when Rubio had really bad patches prior to the prior to last season.
He would find ways to influence the game.
Yes, or he'd get physical, or he'd win the ball back or do something else. Like, if nothing else, even when Kai Kamara in 2019 had gone two or three games without a goal, he was occupying a center back to make somebody else's life easier.
Yeah.
It's not obvious to me what other way, other than chasing down hopeless balls and, like, forcing the center backs to make a decent pass where they've got 2 seconds to think about what they're doing, what other value Kevin Cabral is bringing. And he's doing this in what I still feel like is not his natural position. We did see Darren Yapi was back with the U20 from the U20s in this game, Brendan. He came on in the second half as well. But at this point, I'm start Yapi up top because at the very least he doesn't lose the ball, and let Cabral be out wide where he's not banging bodies against somebody, you know, 20 pounds heavier than him.
Yeah.
I want to shout out the beer that you brought, Brendan.
Thank you.
So, Half Acre Pony Pilsner 16-ounce. Where is this from?
That is from Chicago.
It's from Chicago? Okay, yes. So shout out to you for not bringing Malort's, Brendan.
Absolutely not.
This is the kind of podcast where we would fight each other and then punch our faces in the... Or whatever the Malort slogan is that I wouldn't know that you would as a native Chicagoan. But so... Okay, Brendan, it's time for my big thing, and I've sorted this out and really thought about this. Listeners, we had post-game media availability. Robin came in, was obviously punchy. We've obviously documented on Twitter and in our writing about his recent criticism of the officiating. He was convinced that the Jonathan Lewis shoulder-to-shoulder with Quinn in Columbus should have been a foul, and if it's a foul, it should have been dog so, ergo a red card. He was obviously and rightfully frustrated with Moise Bombito's second yellow against San Jose Earthquakes. And he kind of got a little punchy with you, Brendan.
Oh, yeah.
Part of that was maybe you poorly wording the question and maybe choosing your words wrong. But also, every single head coach, folks, and I'd say this is true about all sports, they come in a mood, and it doesn't matter what the first question is or who asks the first question, they're going to steamroll that beat reporter no matter what. And unfortunately, Brendan, you raised your hand first in the Zoom call, and you were tied to the train tracks as the Fraser Express came through.
Yeah, I asked about discipline because we saw it so many times last year when it seemed like the discipline undid the team.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I can think of, I don't know, last year down the stretch, last summer and into the fall when they gave themselves a chance, they would get silly yellows they would have to be suspended the next game and that would show up on the field, or they would get reds. And then so I asked again if it was a discipline issue, and then he punched back fairly enough. He's like, it's not a discipline issue. No, I don't know what you're talking about. I'm like, well, coach, I just pointed out, how many red cards it's been. And he said, absolutely not. And then he just kept on rolling with it. But if you look at the stats, last year the team led the league in yellow cards, or was second in the league in yellow cards, with one behind Houston.
Mm-hmm.
And they led the league, again, in reds. I think it was with 6 last year.
Mm-hmm.
And so... I don't know what it was with last year, but this year, sure, probably some questionable calls. I totally can see where Fraser is coming from. But it also, I mean, Charlie Bohm wrote about it too, with wrapping up the weekend. It was just about indiscipline. And so I still kind of stand by that. There is so much jet fuel and passion with this team. It is the way that this organization is built to go after every single ball, no matter the cost. It is DNA hard-coded into them. So when they do it and it doesn't work, it's almost as if, well, you know, it's the way that this club has always done it. We've always gone off and kind of really gone for every single thing. But at some point, you got to think, all right, even after Brian's red card, Lawless, he got an early yellow for no reason, frankly. Mm-hmm. Didn't have to be in that position, but he ultimately did. And then the second one, and he was probably hoping the ref would be lenient, considering they were down to 10 when he grabbed him and pulled him back. But that's not the way that the refs were designed to call games this year. You know, when it's a clear pullback, it's a yellow card, mm-hmm. and it's a second red.
Yeah, well, he pulls him back from midfield too, Brendan. And there's a bunch of defenders back. Like, they're in a good position as well there. You know, you're almost giving the opposing attacker on the ball like a non-consensual piggyback ride. You're asking for it. There are other ways you could have handled that. And so where I think Robin maybe got hung up on with your question, Brendan, or maybe you phrased it poorly, or Robin was just in a mood and it didn't matter how you asked it, I think discipline's maybe the wrong word. Galvan was trying to go for the ball. He made a poor calculation in what he did, but he wasn't going in. This wasn't Nigel de Jong, like, you know, kicking David Villa in the chest, you know, no mercy, get him a body bag, Cobra Kai.
Andres Maxu would have chested that down versus Brian Galvan, who literally had to kick above him.
Yeah, so the only truly ill-disciplined moment that I think you've seen from the Rapids has been, I mean, I think you could say the entire team collectively lost their cool against Philadelphia. And certainly yeah. Brian Galvan deserved to be red carded in that play, albeit I can't remember which Philly player it was or what they got sent off for their red. So I don't know which red happened first in that. But so that's the one play where I could say the team lost its discipline. But I think maybe the more appropriate word to use for that would have been composure
yeah.
or situational awareness, or the adjustment to that, because Moise Bombito has to know that he's on a yellow card. He goes in for that tackle. He almost gets it perfectly. We'll talk a little bit about Moise and where he's coming from on that as well, but he has to know that if he doesn't win the ball or he goes to the man in that situation, you're giving the referee an opportunity to give you a red card. Yes, Brian Galvan is frustrated 39 minutes into the game. He's gotten the ball a handful of times. He's done something good with it every single time. They can't win the ball back. Usually he passes the ball to a guy in a good area and they immediately give it away. He's frustrated. He wants to win and go on the counterattack as well. That ball is not the end-all be-all of that game, and going in to try and win that 50-50 or that 80-20 and getting a red card does not help your team. Situational awareness matters, listeners. Lal Sabubu, let's just say that, you know, let's take the Quinton situation with Jonathan Lewis. Brendan, if the United States men's national team is up 1-0 in the final minute of stoppage time of the World Cup final, and Kylian Mbappe gets in behind Tim Ream, and the only thing Tim Ream can do to stop him from getting in on goal is taking him down, you take the dog so, you let the guys get back into position, you defend the free kick, and you hope 10-11 you could see out that final minute and win the freaking World Cup.
Yep.
If that's in the first minute of play, you've got 30 yards to catch up to him, try and cut down the angle, try to put him in a position where he has a difficult shot against the goalkeeper, and worst case scenario, if you give up a goal in that situation, it's 1-0. You've got so much game time left to play in that regard. That 50-50 for Galvan was not the end-all be-all, and you have to know that if you go in like the way that you did, you're giving the referee an excuse to give you a red card, and at that point you're losing. You're the reason that your team lost the game. Same thing for Lalas Abubakar at that point. His red card was within the 75th minute. It's still 1-0. Yeah. You're still only down
still
a man at this.
Still nothing.
You know, Darren,
and they didn't even look. When they went down, there were stretches after they went down where they looked good on the counterattack. They looked okay.
It did not look like it was 10 yeah. versus. It looked like a bad team on the road against a good team at home and everything, but it did not look at times like the Rapids were down a man in that regard. So Lawless has to know in that situation, I am on a yellow card. I cannot give the referee an easy excuse to give me a second yellow card. We win this ball back after Orlando counterattacks it. We huff it up to Darren Yapi. He wins a free kick, and then we've maybe got a set piece to go get the game and get a 1-1. He has to know, I get a second yellow card in that point, the team's done. There's no way we're coming back. And even then, even not just the situational awareness of the game state and what's at stake in there, Brendan, the balls at midfield, the start of the foul that Lawless commits that ultimately gets him his second yellow card was in the defensive half. Maxu is back. The fullbacks are back. You have numbers back. Even if you completely lose that guy, you still have your teammates still have a numerical advantage against the opposition. You're a fast guy. You can catch up to him. You try to give an opponent a piggyback ride that they didn't want and everything. You're giving the referee an excuse to give you another card.
So, post-game.
Okay, can I finish my...
Yes.
Okay. So, good teams are able to overcome bad officiating.
Yep.
mentally tough and situationally aware teams are able to recognize what the referee is doing, and rather than thinking, oh, this isn't ideal for how we want to play, I'm going to get mad and let it get to me, I'm going to try to use it to my advantage. Philadelphia Union figured out how the referee was managing that game 20 minutes into that game a couple weeks ago, and they said, this perfectly fits into it, we are going to poop house the Rapids, and the Rapids absolutely lost their mind. The Rapids got CONCACAF'd by the Philadelphia Union in that game. I would argue the Rapids have been CONCACAF'd by the officiating in the last three games between the Lewis no-call dog show, the Bombito red card, and the two red cards in this situation. So Robin can sit there and say that you know, that Galvan wasn't him getting the red miss, that Bombito didn't get the red miss, that Lalsu Boubacar didn't get the red miss. Those were not discipline issues. But if you look at those plays and don't think there's something different in how we could have handled that, we could have been more situationally aware, and if Robin doesn't see and realize that privately, and the players don't see and realize that, and if they don't have a conversation before the Vancouver game next week and say, we're going to handle this differently, then this team in this season truly are lost.
So, wow. There we go.
Yes.
So, to go off of that, Braden Nurse, he asked this, the question that Robin would eventually answer a Matt sort of response, and he said, quote, this team feels absolutely hard done every single time they play by the officials. They feel like every single time they go out calls are being made against them. It's a very difficult situation to be in for any players, much less given the situation we're in, and the delight that the referees seem to take to hand out the red cards. And that's where I ended it. But he kept going. So great question, Braden, to get him to open up like that, because my question certainly didn't. But to Matt's point, yeah, at some point you have to stop feeling woe is me, we're getting screwed, and just find a way to get CONCACAF-y with it. And if it's a CONCACAF like official decisions, well, shoot, you've got the Rapids DNA where you're going after every single ball and you're going after every single challenge and going to hard-nose your way throughout 90 minutes. Overcome one bad element and get back to the club DNA.
Yeah, the episode of Ted Lasso from the recent season ended, Brendan, where it was the first leg against West Ham at West Ham, where they're down at halftime, they're not playing particularly well, and the coaching staff decides to show the team the security camera footage of Nate going into the locker room after the game from the previous season, ripping up the belief sign and everything, and they get all charged up and everything. And what do, Brendan? They go in, Rapid Slug Life, bunch of red cards, they completely implode and everything. They could have easily taken that and said, okay, F this guy, we're going to play to our best level as well.
Yeah.
And so on some level, to your point then, I think we can agree in this is a team that is poorly aware of the officiating and is poorly coached to adjusting and realizing that. They just get upset and they cry and take their toys out of the sandbox and go home, or they rage quit out of the game as well in that regard. Rage quit's not the right word. Rage quit would be them doing what Richmond did and then losing their discipline. They're poorly handling it. And I understand in that moment, Brendan, that Robin's sticking up for... He's not talking to us.
No,
he's talking to his team.
And the league.
And he's talking to the league about that as well. So I think...
He's backing his players to the hill because he's an MLS lifer.
Yes.
He knows what this can do to a team.
Yes. Anything else that we want to say about that, or do we want to move on to the one other interesting personnel thing from this game, Brendan?
Go for it.
So this is the third straight MLS game, listeners, that Marco Ilicha has started in goal, and it was interesting when he got his first start in Columbus because the thought was, oh, midweek game, is he getting in rotation, and is William Yarbrough going to start on the weekend against San Jose? And Marco's now started three straight games. He now has five for including the two Open Cup games, and we had a nice email about that from Matt Cleveland. Hey guys, I'm currently deployed in Japan, and it's been hard to keep up with the team. He goes on to talk about Apple TV. Matt Cleveland's listeners is stationed on the island of Okinawa, and so obviously time zones aren't good for him, and then also Apple TV is still really bad about showing you the scores when you open the app, even after the game. So, Matt, potentially you log on to the app. It's like, okay, I'm going to watch the Rapids game. Oh, they lost 2-0 to Orlando. That kind of ruins it. But so he asks, my question is about Yarbrough versus Ilicha. Is Ilicha getting a run now because the team wants to, quote, kick the tires, end quote, before the transfer window opens? Or did Yarbrough do something, injury or play, to lose his spot? Like I said, I'm not following the team as closely as usual, but I thought Yarbrough was having a good season. Brendan, as our guest, I will give you first take.
Well, Matt, thank you for first of all, thanks for your service, and thank you for submitting a great question. I actually think you're right with your first thought. They're trying to see whether the loan is going to be worth it, because the Rapids over the offseason looked for a couple different goalkeepers, and they found Ilicha, and really, aside from the Open Cup, which, you know, he got, what, two or three games, and, you know, a couple league starts now, and, you know, it's time to really know, because his loan is going to be up at the end of the month.
And July 2023, so next month. That's what the Rapids have in their press release.
July 2023. Yes. We don't know the date then. Got it. Okay. Yes. Okay.
So I think that means the end of the month. We should probably confirm that. But then, so then there's the option to buy.
Right. Continue. If it's going to be an option to buy, I mean, it's going to be a big option, because he is currently, I guess, age level. He's at his goalkeeping kind of peak, where it's he's what, 26, 27? Mm-hmm. He's kind of at that perfect age where he can win over a job. And while William Yarbrough has absolutely been phenomenal this year, at the end of the day, the Rapids have to know what their future is going to look like. And since you're overseas, you might know that Abe Rodriguez, the goalkeeper from last year, has been out with a foot injury.
He did just come back. He was not on last week's injury report.
You're right.
He's been out. Adam Beaudry.
He's 17 or 18.
He's been crushing it with Rapids too. What that's worth.
Mm-hmm. So he's one for the future, but he's only 17 or 18. But he's definitely got U.S. men's national team like quality in his sights. He was at the U. He's going to be a big part of the U18 World Cup or whatever it's going to be in November.
Yeah. Yes. He was in qualification.
Yes.
About the time the jersey got dropped this offseason.
Right. So ultimately, he's still too young. So Ilicha is kind of that perfect age. From when I first saw him to when I saw him on Saturday, I mean, it was drastic. I mean, when I first saw him play for R2, he got a couple games there, and it was, you could tell he was rusty and all that. But he's been really good when he's been, I guess, called into it. But as somebody pointed out, maybe it was you, Matt, who pointed out on the pod the other week, that sometimes I notice that he can just get rooted to the spot. I don't know if that was you.
Who were talking about?
Ilicha. Like, when I guess, shots come in, sometimes I've seen him just, whether they're either A, they're just like going to the top corner, no way I can save that, or B, or like it's a deflection. I've seen on that first goal, like, I don't think he moved at all. On the second goal, I'm trying to think if he
One, he was diving, he was getting ready to dive the other way, and then it got deflected.
Okay, that's right.
So
my bad.
I don't know that.
But okay, maybe it's me, but like sometimes maybe it was Columbus or Atlanta that some of them. No, was
Atlanta
that
would have been
Yarbrough.
I don't know.
So okay.
So it would have been the three goals in Columbus. It
was something that I've just noticed. Maybe it was with his time from R2 as well, I think, because he gave up a couple goals there. But yeah, sometimes he can get a bit rooted. But when he's called upon, he's absolutely been rock solid for them, despite the score lines. You know, if the defense can get a really good 90 minutes together and keep it throughout the game, and he's required to make some saves, he absolutely will do. So I think at the end of the day, I think they probably will purchase him, because looking at it, you know, we don't know how they feel about the situation within the league, goalkeeper-wise, and we don't know what the quality is like in Europe, whether they can find someone right now who is as affordable and as ready to go and wants to be fighting for their future in MLS, you know? So I think the Rapids will probably end up picking up his option and purchasing because he's kind of in that sweet spot.
I think it's so. I think there's one of two possibilities here, Matt, that are happening with the goalkeeper situation. Maybe one of three. I think the first one is the one that you've suggested. The Rapids have a purchase option on Marco, and he previously only gotten appearances in the Open Cup. And whether it was Robin Fraser, whether it's Chris Sharpie, whether it's the analytics team up in the front office, they need more MLS first team minutes data on him to evaluate him to see if he's getting used to the league and then to determine whether or not he's a good purchase for the team financially. So there's that. I think that's one possibility. I think it's worth pointing out, Brendan, that Yarbrough's last start was technically the 1-0 loss to FC Cincinnati where he did not look particularly good on that Dombachi shot. I think you see from his reaction, he was clearly mad at himself as well. And that's really the first soft goal that Yarbrough's given up. Maybe you could argue that he would blame himself for not setting up his wall better for that free kick against Atlanta as well. So I think that's a possibility. Brendan, you've been out to training. Yarbrough's been fully participating. He hasn't been on any of the availability reports, not even as questionable. So I don't think there's an injury going on there. I think Ilitch has gradually caught up to and is now beating him out in training to where he's earned the spot. Either Robin realizes the situation or maybe there's, you know, some polite reminders from his goalkeeper coach or from the front office about that situation, or they're going back and forth competition-wise. There's also plenty of times, Brendan, where you'll see this a lot more in hockey than you will in soccer, where the team's on a rough patch, the goaltender hasn't necessarily been the problem, but you've rotated the squad, you've called up a couple guys from the AHL affiliate or whatever, and you just think like we haven't given the backup Tendy a start in 2 or 3 weeks, let's throw him out on a Saturday night on, you know, a couple days rest and everything, and just see if he brings something else there. And so even if not Will's fault of where the team's at, certainly where he is not getting a big slice of the blame pie for this team being bottom of the supporter shield standings competing for the wooden spoon. But it's one other change you can make because, you know, Bombito's been up and down as well. I don't know that there's another easier option that you could have there in terms of rotating the squad else significantly. You know, if Yapi wasn't at the U-20 World Cup, maybe you give him a few more starts in there. We know Barrios is every single other piece on this team right now is either a known quantity or known to not be good enough. And so Marco Ilicha being the unknown maybe was a possibility. I think it's going to be a big summer as well, Brendan, because you're looking at it. What previous conversations did the front office have with KSC regarding the financial implications of wanting to bring Marco on full time after the loan option was there? Do their feelings about that change with the Nuggets winning the NBA championship? I don't think so. But you also have to remember the last big check that they cut was for Max, and it was, this is a young guy who's going to help us in the future, but also is a viable financial option for us as well. And KSC, understandably, accounting would be looking at that and saying, we flushed $1 million down the drain because of what happened with this situation. You know, Brian Galvan on a U-22 contract, he was coming in, he was a bit of a project, he was supposed to come good, he gets injured, what happened there? And then he comes back and he's gotten 2 red cards on the team as well. I could see where KSC is looking at this and thinking that, you know, we've given you a lot of assets to try and spend on that. And the only real big check that we've gotten in that regard was for Sam Vines. And that was just proof that us continuing to burn a couple $1 million a year on the academy was a worthwhile investment. So I could see where there's some financial conversations, regardless of the implications on the pitch as well with Marco. Last thing that I want to say that I want to point out, Matthew, it was fitting of what he also said in this email, listeners. The local team that he has there in Okinawa is a...
What a phenomenal email.
Is a J3 team called FC Ryukyu. R-Y-U-K-Y-U. I'm not sure how to say that. They're the only team on the island. They got relegated from J2 last year, and they're currently in last place. They're about to pull a Sunderland and get relegated to the fourth division, potentially. Not great footy, but I can watch in person. I did recognize a couple of songs the supporters sing, and check out the link. And Brendan, they have their own variation of Country Road or Mountain Road that they sing, and they sing it in English. So listeners, here we go. So, almost heaven, Okinawa, Kunigami Mountain, Shuri Castle. Not sure what Kunigami Mountain is or what Shuri Castle is. Life is old here, older than the trees, younger than the mountains, growing like a breeze. Country road, take me home to the place I belong, Okinawa. FC Ryukyu, take me home, country road.
Nice one.
And the lyrics go on. There's something about a fisherman's lady and stranger blue water. I'm not sure with, I'm going to assume a lot of those Japanese people speaking English as a second language, what vowels they emphasize and what length and duration and everything. But Brendan, it was so funny when I was at the Feyenoord game to hear the pregame set list that they have. They have the dupe song as a pregame song. Ooh. Apparently that's not uncommon in Europe, so it's not like Philadelphia Union made that song. I don't know that there's a lot of teams that have the dupe song as their goal song, and they also play Sweet Caroline. But then at the end of the ba ba ba, they do Feyenoord instead of Sweet Caroline, ba ba ba. So that's interesting. And that was kind of fun to see a bunch of Dutch intoxicated guys sing that as well. And then go ahead, I'll put a link in the show notes as well to the song lyrics that Matthew included in the email for listeners who want to check it out. And if you just look at the club's crest as well, it's got these two like dragon creatures, and I think it's a dark red, but it's not that far enough from burgundy, their primary shirt color as well, Brendan. So many parallels that you have here between team at the bottom of the table.
Yeah.
They sing a variation of Mountain Road and a darkish red color jersey as well.
I mean, all right. So only one thing I could add to that is that Wolverhampton and Aston Villa, they have the song by Jeff Beck called Hi Ho Silver Lining. Look mm-hmm. it up. And the chorus goes, you know, Hi Ho Silver
Sheffield
Lining.
Wednesday.
And then they chant, exactly. But then they chant either Wolverhampton or Aston Villa, and I'm like, well, hi-ho, Colorado.
Mm-hmm.
Come on, front office. The team needs a lift. Maybe a new song will do it.
Brendan, they don't play Mountain Road before kickoff now. Is that why? Are the soccer gods, or the MLS scriptwriters punishing the Rapids for taking away the one fun thing they had?
I don't know. I mean, We did see the TIFO.
The Miller Moss are leaving, so maybe it's a win. Maybe the Rapids just couldn't win when the plague was at DSG.
Maybe.
There was a fun Bam Adebayo was like swatting away one of the moths during one of his his pre or post game media availabilities, which I thought was kind of funny. He's like, they got moths here. Also, kind of funny thing, Brendan, that a guy who lives in Florida was complaining about bugs because I've seen
Florida man.
Yes, but like I have seen like bugs in South Florida outside of like Australia and the Amazon are about as bad as they get. So the fact that Bam Adebayo was freaking out about a relatively small-sized, non-biting, harmless moth was... he was soft as Charmin, and the Joker had his way.
Yeah.
Brendan, let's move on then. So as we mentioned, listeners, Moise Bombito will be with the Canadiens men's national team. They'll be playing, if you're listening to us on Thursday, today at time of recording, they'll be playing Panama in the semifinal, and then USA versus Mexico will be the nightcap for the Nations League, and then the winners will play each other in the final on Sunday night, and then I think it's a 3 or a 4 p.m. Mountain Time kickoff for the third place game. Brendan, we both got to speak with Mike Brown, who was Bombito's head coach when he was at University of Iowa Iowa Western Community College, and then we spoke to Moise after he was officially in camp later that day. I published a huge long editorial for Burgundy Wave, so I'll let those words speak for itself.
I'm also doing a feature for Thursday.
Yeah, but
Friday. Yeah.
Big takeaways from the media availability we've had, Brendan, and what do we think Moise brings to the Canucks?
Oh my gosh. What after talking to Coach Mike Brown, I mean, I love Moise's journey even more because now we, if you see that fight and that feistiness in him, it honestly was kind of honed at junior college. I mean, he talked about it, that he still plays with a big chip on his shoulder, and he still thinks about really his journey, how he was overlooked by in Montreal, Club de Foot, you know, the Impact.
It still would have been the Impact at the time.
All right, whatever. Anyhow, you know, no Division One looks, no what, no nothing. So he found his way in the middle of Iowa, who he's, and all of a sudden he's playing for this coach. Read Matt and Mai's article at whenever this podcast comes out, because we'll have some crazy details. Because the way that Mike Brown would get these guys motivated was unreal. Needless to say, when we asked him about the drill names, the Gauntlet and Bloody Nose, Moyes went on a great rant about how it still inspired him and how much he still really thinks about the fight that it took to get through those drills. Coach Brown, credit for doing such a thing at the community college level, because everybody comes into that level with a chip on their shoulder. But Coach Brown was saying how much, you know, Moise grew as a person as well. And now we're seeing it with Canada. And it's, you know, kind of surreal that he's had this crazy meteoric rise from draft to Vegas, really, in the span of, I don't know, 7-8 months? No, less than that.
Well, so, Brendan, it would have been this
December.
Time, June 10th, 2021.
I wrote
would have been,
it was like 171 days from when he was drafted to when he was called into the national
game. I was thinking in terms of his start of junior college to now. We're talking 2.5 years.
Yes, 2.5 years.
Which is insane.
Insane. So, yeah, now that he's in, all of a sudden, in this national team camp, you know, John Herdman calls him, you know, somebody with potential. And then he lists the biggest names currently in Canada soccer. Tayshaun Buchanan, Fonzie Davis, you know, anybody and everybody. He went on like a freaking 5-minute rant.
MLS Generation Adidas, Alfonso Davies, who's won the Champions League. In the same conversation. In the same sentence. I get it, John Herdman's is a vibes guy, but still.
Totally. It is, I mean, I freaking love Moise even more for his story and for just owning his journey.
Mm-hmm.
So, yes.
Yeah.
Moise is the man. We freaking wish him the best of luck, and let's hope he has been practicing his singing voice, because we asked him about it, and he said he's been listening to the Canadian National Anthem in French nonstop since he got the call. And so we hope, A, he sings well tomorrow night, and B, he gets onto the field.
I don't know. I don't pay attention enough, Brendan, to NHL games that are played in Canada to know if in Toronto and all the other places, with the exception of the Bell Centre in Montreal, mm-hmm. do they sing the Canadian National Anthem exclusively in English? I have to imagine they do the French lyrics at Centre Bell in Montreal. But I'm what, like, now that I... If you, I would not know, Brendan, if you were lying to me, if you told me right now for the World Cup, they do it all in English, or they do English, French, English?
You know, I think we saw it when the Raptors reached the NBA Finals. They did a cool little thing with it. It was some group. They did it in both at the same time, and it was,
ooh.
Yeah, I forget, just look it up, Toronto NBA Finals. And it was like the first game for a finals to be in Canada, and they did it in both. And it was you could tell that the crowd was singing in both. So, yeah, there's crossover.
Okay, so I think that's obviously, listeners, you've heard Moise on this podcast as well. You've seen him in media availability. His English is very good. There's some time where I think it's obvious, Brendan, that there's an accent, or he phrases things in ways that I think a Native American speaker wouldn't, but there's no language issue whatsoever. And the fact that, you know, he's still got a decent French contingent as well, with Remy and Kevin Cabral, Alec Dirschbach, who speaks a little bit of French as well, having played there, Abubakar Keita, if I'm not mistaken. Yep. I think there's somebody else that I'm leaving. There's a... Ralph Prizo. There's a bit of a French connection, which is kind of nice there. But Brendan, this is an interesting time for the Nations League, because you still have from what I've seen from the two rosters from the United States, obviously it's gonna be first team guys for the Nations League, and they're gonna go off and finally get a break, and then it's gonna be B-roll guys for the Gold Cup to try and, you know, get some more data for the incoming head coach. The Rapids now have a second interim head coach as Anthony Hudson is off to I can't remember the name of the Qatari team that he's coaching. So it's BJ Callahan who's taking over. So interim to the interim head coach. And then you have a new head coach for Mexico who came out and said this week, Brendan, that after the World Cup and after losing the two finals, both in the Gold Cup and the Nations League of the United States, that El Tri is currently at a deficit. So they're going to take this seriously. But similarly, from a roster standpoint, they have a whole lot of turnover. And so Canada maybe has the most coherent group going into this in terms of coaching staff and playing staff from World Cup qualification to World Cup to now. But at the same time, they were really disappointing at the World Cup off of all of the hype. And we kind of know that Panama's going to be there, and we know where Panama's ceiling is now in the modern version of CONCACAF. So there are three different winners. I would not be surprised at this point. I think the only winner that would really surprise me would be Panama. And I'm not sure I'd be surprised by any of the four teams making the final or making the third place game. So I don't know what to make of it. I do think it is set up, listeners, to where a lot of people are going to think that the final is effectively the semifinal between the U.S. and Mexico. So we'll see what goes on there. I think that's going to be the most emotionally charged game. I do think the most likely outcome is Panama will finish fourth. So then you have a medal, a podium finish for the other three teams as well. So there's a bunch of other outlets that I'm sure you listen to for USMNT talk that are more informed on that than we are. Obviously, no current or former Rapids players in the roster for the United States. Sam Vine still coming back from his injury off of
one Rapids player.
One former Rapids player?
Yes. Austin Trusty.
Oh my God, I forgot. Okay, so Austin Trusty.
Keep an eye out for him, but otherwise we'll keep you posted next week if he does anything.
So Austin Trusty and Tim Ream starting at center back, obviously. But beyond that, there's other U.S. outlets that will cover this more focusedly. And unless something really crazy happens, it won't be more than a banter topic for us. Brendan, I don't think that Moyes starts either of these games.
Nope.
Based on, I believe, the roster, even though it's a 23-man roster, I think you're allowed to have the entire group, including the second and third goalkeeper, on the bench as well. So I have to believe he'll be on the bench for at least one of these games, if it's allowed, in terms of a roster total standpoint. There's a reason he was not on the preliminary roster. He's listed as a center back. There's four center backs. There's three full backs, two of whom are right backs. So I know we've seen Frazier get a little tactically creative with Moyes' role. I don't think if he sees the field, it will be because bad things are going to have to happen to both Alistair Johnson and Richie Larea for that to happen. But if something happens to one of the center backs, I think he could definitely be on the bench for the Sunday game. And if that goes into extra time, I would not be shocked if we see him. And if you read our pieces, you'll get the joke that I'm about to make here, listeners. He will be ready to get a bloody nose. Anything else, Moyes Bombito, that we want to talk about? Or Brendan, do we want to talk about you, Mr. Investigative reporter, Pentagon Papers, Commerce City Papers?
Oh yes, let's do that for what our final segment.
Yes.
Well, if you've already listened this long, you are a diehard Rapids fan and probably a lifer, because what I'm about to say might bring a shock to some people. Victory Crossing is, in all likelihood, going to be back. So, May 1st, this all came about, really, thanks to the Inside Rapids stuff, and a story came into my lap about, from the Commerce City Sentinel. Yes, there is a newspaper in Commerce City. It's Colorado Community Media, and the guy who wrote it was about a city council meeting, and sure enough, KSE proposed that a new iteration of Victory Crossing, a multi-use project, is going to be, they presented it to City Council on the night of May 1st. And I only learned about this really a week or two ago. And so I dug into it, and I can tell you that a source told me that they had an executive session last night that was not open to the public, but it is still being discussed. And so here's the breakdown of who wants what. So there's going to be KSE proposed a land exchange, and in order for that to happen,
Hey, Brendan, who currently owns what land at Dick's Sporting Goods Park?
It is the city of Commerce City, actually owns most of the surrounding land of Field 20, the whole, I guess, area around 56th and...
the stadium footprint as well.
Yes, the parking lot.
I thought most of the parking was actually KSC owned.
The parking lot by Field 20, that side is City of Commerce City owned.
Okay.
So, yes, while it's in the name of KSE, the people who actually own it right now are the City of Commerce City.
Hey, Brendan, isn't there an option for the club to buy it outright at a certain point for like a dollar?
Yes, in 2032. So, but they're trying to, I guess, buy all that land right now so that they can finally build the Victory Crossing. And the reason why they weren't able
KSC
to do that...
KSC is trying to buy the land to build Victory Crossing?
Yes.
Okay.
The reason why they're able to try and do that is because in 2017, the federal government lifted a kind of some sort of, I don't know, thing that was in place that said that you couldn't build on this land. And that was lifted in 2017 to include housing and multi-use. So, yeah, I've got a whole history of this is all, I guess, publicly available on YouTube if you want to really search it, where they lay it out, the whole history of DSGP. It's fascinating. Who paid what? How much? How many acres of land, et cetera, et cetera. And so the big date that they have to... There's a third party in this, and that involves basically the South Adams County Water and District Sanitation District. And they need some land, and the deadline that they potentially set for it to for them to get the land so that they could go through with the funding that they need and all this sort of extra stuff is July 31st. So that's what they're currently negotiating. So they're trying to negotiate a true land transfer between three parties. It's complicated. Basically, KSE would get, all told, they would get essentially 77 acres for free when there is no monetary value to it currently. Even though council members press KSE hard about it, and one council member assumed, she just did some quick math. She's like, I think this land around the area is worth upwards of $50 million, which would be absurd. So for us to do a land swap and for us to get nothing out of it makes no sense. So there's a lot of negotiation going on, and it will be going on for the next month. And if you're going to watch really anything from this sort of, I guess, I don't know, city council meeting, watch Mayor Benjamin Huseman. He speaks for roughly 15 minutes, but he goes on a tremendous, you know, statement about what it means for the Rapids to be in Commerce City and what it would mean if they can't get anything done. Because for the past two decades, the city of Commerce City and the city council has been expecting, Cassie, you're going to build Victory Crossing, which was a plan that was once floated a long time ago, then it fell through, I don't know, a decade ago,
so
at least.
I don't know that you've actually defined this, Brendan. For new listeners, when Dick's Sporting Goods Park originally opened in 2007, the initial plan was for them to have this thing called Victory Crossing. You'll know the two big dirt lots to do immediately west of the stadium. One of them, the south one, has absolutely nothing on it, has had no development. It's basically just a giant pile of dirt that prairie dogs dig into. And the other one has prairie dogs in the north that is employee parking. That's actually also part of the media parking, even though I've parked there maybe a handful, maybe four or five times at the absolute most, Brendan. And so the plan was for those two plots of land to be this big complex. There was going to be shopping. There was going to be a bar.
It's going to be like a town center.
Yes.
And that's still what they're trying to do. But yes, now they just want it elsewhere on the property if they can buy it.
Yes. So now where on that property it goes and how it would work in logistically with anything on game day, I think is an interesting question. I think where it was originally planned was the ideal location. So that didn't happen for a number of reasons. There were environmental concerns. Don't quote me on this, listeners. I remember there being something about the actual prairie dogs being there that made it problematic from from an environmental standpoint. And I don't know, Brendan, if when that came up, given the timing that you mentioned it, that
2017 was when it was all lifted.
Okay, so that would have been prior to the plague that would have knocked out the population that then I didn't see for the better part of a year and a half. The plague game that would have been the game against Montreal in 2019, where the Prairie Dogs had the plague and they were limiting parking and everything. And I think from about a week after that, I didn't see a Prairie Dog, Brendan, until probably the middle of 2021. So that's a pretty long time to not see them. But so that didn't happen for a number of reasons. I could see where the club thought that it didn't make sense financially. I could see certainly where the city, where people on the board at Commerce City thought this is something that you promised that would have been another economic development. Mm-hmm. And let's be real, listeners, there's a lot of, with the way the tailgate is and the fact that there's not a lot of people going to the overtime bar across the street on Quebec to spend money in Commerce City or to, you know, go down the street to Starbucks or Chipotle or wherever. There's a lot of fans who come in, go to the tailgate, spend money in the stadium, which goes to KSC, and then leave and don't actually spend their money in Commerce City. So
that's exactly what
parallels to Victory Boulevard, I would put. Listeners, if you've ever been to Gillette for a Revs or a New England Patriots game, the one Gillette Street or one Gillette Boulevard, they have a whole complex there that complements Gillette Stadium. No other pub for Commerce City would be a parallel. So there was almost going to be a Rapids-themed soccer bar that was going to be the pregame and the postgame, effectively be what Dale's is now, across the street from the stadium. And that was going to be done in like 2010 to 12-ish with the stadium opening up in 2007, and that was potentially going to be a place where the club could do official events instead of doing their, you know, thing out in Rhino and trying to develop a relationship, have a bar on location where they could spend and have that be another and do a whole bunch of other things associated with that. And let's be real, Brendan, outside of actual Rapids games and fish sticks, like, there's not a whole lot that they're doing that's bringing people into Commerce City from outside, right, that are then spending money and then adding economic value.
Yes, correct. So last thing I want to say is Matt Mahoney, who was the KSC, I think, head of development, he was the one who presented. He said, you know, he laid out a plan, and somebody from HGK, which is Brian Jensek, basically, that would be the company that would do this sort of Victory Crossing things, and they've done the likes of the Battery in Atlanta, where the Braves' new stadium is, St. Louis City's new area in downtown, and the Power and Light District downtown KC as well. But Mahoney, you know, he was straight up asked, like, he was grilled by the city council. And we got some actual good answers from him. So he said roughly the current capital investment that they're doing this year is going to be roughly $2 million on this year, the improvements on the stadium. And then this was his quote.
That $2 million, listeners, is the stuff at Dale's Pub. That is the expansion of the supporters section on the south side. And I don't know if that it does or does not include the north boundary work as well. That's what he was referring to. That's what the clubs refer to in their public statements about this.
So the other thing is, quote, we're, you know, this is a, I guess, direct quote, but the estimates aren't exactly there yet. But he said, quote, we're looking at all new infrastructure from roofing, mechanical units, etc. And that's another $15 million to $20 million that we're underway on right now. And then the fields and the complex study, as you know, that's a pretty in-depth analysis that we're going to keep up with the rest of the league. And that could range from another $40 to $80 million. And then he was specifically asked, how much did it cost to build the stadium? $180 million. So even with that, it wouldn't really bring it up to roughly what the newest stadium is, but it would still be something. And then he, earlier in the meeting, I believe it was the city manager who stated that if they were to acquire the parking lot, Field 20, all that sort of the first team area fields plus the other fields around what likely would be the new Victory Crossing area. They said, quote, the owner would like to develop additional MLS facilities, fields, office spaces for the MLS team. And I'm going to presume, you know, an update on training facilities as well. So, yeah. So this was all on the May 1st Commerce City Council meeting. They are currently negotiating all this right now. It's really tense, as far as I know. And I'm trying to figure out, get more stuff on the record and do some more reporting on it. Yeah. So,
and all of this is happening, Brendan, as the club confirmed my reporting from back in March about the club doing a feasibility study on improving their infrastructure. And so I think it's a valid question, Brendan. If by the time that July deadline comes up, what comes of the land to the point where the Rapids decide, is the improvements that we're making to the training facility even going to be on Field 20? Is what Field 20 served as the first team training pitch, is that going to be moved somewhere else?
I mean, I assume so. Like, it's Field 20 through 24. That goes all the way to Central Park Boulevard. Yeah,
but also, Brendan, we've done that walk in. Like, the fact that it's first division in MLS, Messi's coming into the league and everything, you've got teams dropping between expansion fees, the cost for the training facility and the cost for the stadium. Like, San Diego, all in told, folks, could be spending upwards of $1 billion to get off the ground. And the fact that you still have first-team players walking in cleats across hot asphalt in the middle of the summer or icy asphalt in March, April, you know, October, November is an absolute joke. And so what becomes of this land, I think, is an interesting question of what then they do from an infrastructure standpoint. Because again, like, Brendan, do the Rapids turn over some of that field space in order to get other land that they would rather have? I'm just looking at the footprint right now on Google Maps of the Dick's Sporting Goods Park area.
They could buy the parking lot for 2032, and they could buy the Field 20 and other surrounding fields for an appraisal price in 2032 as well.
Yeah, so I'm just looking at this from an engineering surveying standpoint, Brendan. North of Central Park Boulevard / Prairie Parkway is the Prairie Gateway open space. You're not going that way.
No.
Okay. So then maybe there's a conversation to be had about relocating the Commerce City Police Department. I don't think that's going anywhere anytime soon.
Nope.
You've got the USPS that is due southwest of DSG as well. There's a whole bunch of dirt space below, I guess, Field 3, Field 13, all that space and everything. Brendan, that's a pretty good, that is a decent size block of land that an equivalent to McGregor Square off the third baseline at Coors Field could exist. Or at least something close to what Victory Boulevard's original, you know, marked up, very general architectural conceptual drawings could have been as well. Maybe then you actually turn the parking lots that you have immediately west of the stadium into actual parking lots. Maybe you turn that into a full parking structure as well. So then maybe the first team training pitch can be currently where lot single A is right now. All of this is up for discussion, but a lot of big things have to happen. And as someone who works in these spaces regularly, Brendan, like the three parties working in, and a lot of them disgruntled and rightfully disgruntled, is going to make this complicated.
Oh yeah, this is some complex
and this is
stuff.
This is some fate of the club stuff. This will have millions of dollars of implications.
But also, thank you, American government, for city councils being televised and on YouTube, because otherwise, I would have no idea that KSE even presented this plan. This totally slipped my radar until it fell in my lap. And thankfully, if you really want to research, it's an hour and 20-minute presentation. But it's fascinating.
Rapid C-SPAN.
Yes!
Okay.
Currently on the far side of the table, but at least we've got some Rapid C-SPAN.
Yes. Brendan, what do you think comes out of this? What are the range of possibilities? Okay, first of all,
endless. I don't think it's a source told me it's very, very infancy. And the July 31st deadline, while it is absolutely important to know what's going to happen, I mean, this could be another drawn out process. I think it's really at the start of its, you know, at the beginning of it all.
Okay. ideal scenario, the Rapids get all the land, control it.
It's built.
Overvamp the infrastructure.
It's built ahead of the 2026 World Cup.
Built ahead of the 2026 World Cup.
Yes.
Okay. That's the, and this is a McGregor Square improved stadium, yes. Like overall of that improved
Quick,
training pitch.
Efficient construction times, no delays, no this, that, and the other. Everything actually comes together as
There's
they
no
want it to.
Okay.
I know.
Okay. So that's the.
But I've got to imagine they're doing this now, 2023, because of 2026. Some part of me feels like that's tied in.
That seems. This is the thing that I've thought as well, Brent. Like the. So there's the stuff that I'll include a link to my piece on this as well, listeners, for those of you who haven't seen that Inside Rapids thread as well. But like, there's a part of me that wonders, Brendan, was the at no point in my reporting when Denver didn't get the World Cup bid, was there, did any of my sources mention the infrastructure or the training stuff that was available, which DSG would have had? There would have been non-competing clubs could have co-trained at Dix, and then there would have been a conversation of where else they're going to
Boulder
as well.
Or wherever, yeah.
Yeah, because there's CU stuff as well, and I guess the outdoor grass facility for the Broncos would have been in play as well.
Yeah.
So, potentially two teams that aren't playing each other at the Denver's facility, at the Broncos facility, excuse me, and then the two out at DSG. And I have to wonder if that was potentially a variable. Or had Denver gotten the World Cup, would this have been expedited and all this would have been sorted as
probably.
Well? Just the thing that I'm thinking, but, you know, I guess the, what's the immediate implication? Is there any scenario, Brendan, where Commerce City takes all the land back and then decides to kick out the Rapids Oakland Coliseum style?
No.
Okay.
No. I just, they wouldn't, they would lose, you know, they want business in the town because as the city council literally mentioned, the Real Colorado Youth Tournament was held that weekend.
Mm-hmm.
And they said, at no point do any parents ever stop in Commerce City for post-game meals.
Mm-hmm.
Even the mayor said him and his daughter had to go all the way down Central Park Boulevard just to get food. Like, no place, you know, nothing like that exists in town.
Mm-hmm.
So they can't. That would be quite literally the worst-case scenario. But he did bring it up, in case you're wondering. The mayor was basically saying, look what happened with San Diego and its football team.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want this to happen to the Rapids and to Commerce City.
Okay.
But that would be the absolute worst case scenario. But we as a city council have to go back and negotiate and figure out what is best for city council. Because there's absolutely, frankly, to be honest, there is a contentious relationship between KSE and city and Commerce City. Because they feel hard done and they don't want to get strong-armed again. Because
mm-hmm.
this is the most public deal that they've ever done, like,
mm-hmm.
view-wise for the town.
Yeah.
So, yes.
They want to make it easier, so the DSG and the greater facility and what the Rapids have put on there make it easier for people to come to Commerce City. They want to act in good faith, and they want the club to act in good faith in a way that's then going to make people want to come to Commerce City and want to come to GSG more, want to stay there and in particular have some other economic influence that's outside the physical footprint of the Richard that then has them putting money in KSC and MLS's pocket rather than actually something that's a revenue community builder for actually Commerce City. And the club has failed to deliver on those initial, albeit very non-firm and non-accountable promises, and there's a way to get there, but at the same time, like, they've done this before in good faith, and KSC has found ways to be like, we're not doing that because we don't want to spend the money.
It's going to be an interesting month, so tune in. We'll probably have much more to say on it.
Might even be more interesting than what's going on with the Colorado Rapids directly.
That's all I got. That's what we got, right? That's the final part of our rundown. It was a long rundown and an important one because you led into it from last week,
mm-hmm.
and I appreciate that. So thanks for letting me talk about it because it's a big potential moment for the club and for the town of Commerce City.
Listeners, you can follow Brendan on Twitter at Brendan Plode. Obviously, check out all of his content over at the Denver Post. You follow me on Twitter at LWS Matt Pollard. Follow the podcast on Twitter at Rapids96Podcast. Send us your questions on Twitter using the hashtag AskHTHL or email us like Matthew Cleveland did at rapids96podcast@gmail.com. And you can support us by subscribing to our Substack, holdingthehighline.substack.com. Rate, review, share, subscribe, wherever you get your podcasts. We're on pretty much every single platform that we'd want to be on. You know, if we're not on a platform that you'd prefer us to be on, there's some news on some stuff going on with that that might be changing that won't affect you, but it'll affect us on the front end and everything. Oh, and Rabbi did text me before we hit the record button that the designs have been finalized for the beer steins for this summer. So we were releasing. Those are still secret. Those are still embargoed here, Mr. Brendan Plone, Denver Post reporter. But we'll be releasing those publicly in the next couple weeks, hopefully. And they will be available for purchase, as we promised, by the July 4th home game. Listeners, we'll see you next week to bring it in.
See ya.